podcast world. It's Sean Arama here. Another edition of On the Road. This is one, normally when I record these episodes, I normally put them out in the order that they're recorded. Usually what I do is I record the podcast whenever something strikes me and I have something I want to talk about. And then I record it, and then I air it in chronological order. This one's going to fall out of the chronology because it's a bit topical. And, I kind of want to put it out earlier. So what we're going to talk about today is the news I've been avoiding talking about, and I'm kind of avoiding talking about with anybody, including friends and whatnot, because I don't know how to deal with this one. It was reported several weeks ago that the lead singer for Tragic Leap, Gord Downie, has been diagnosed with brain cancer. And I guess he's been given... Well, I haven't read too many of the articles because I just can't. Basically announced... They announced their final tour. I guess it's a send-off while he's still cognizant. So they're doing a final tour, and that's it, and basically Gord's going to die, pretty much, I guess, after that, I guess is what's going to happen. Yeah, this is, you know, I know a lot of people are saying 2016, the year the music died, there's been so many deaths this year, end of last year, and it's just the thing, like a lot of these rockers are getting up there in age. Lemmy passing away from Motorhead, David Bowie passing away, there's a lot of people that have been passing away recently, but it's just the age category we fall in. Chris Jericho talked about this in his podcast where he was talking about the same thing. It's just like these guys are, you know, between their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and, you know, that's just what happens. Eventually, you get old and you die, and that's just what it is. It's not some conspiracy or otherwise, but each death has been incredibly impactful to all of us. And it's sad, but it's the way life goes. The Gord Downie thing, I guess... This feels a bit different in that he knows he's going to die, or he has a timeline, I guess, because we all know we're going to die eventually, and he wants to make a send-off kind of to the fans, because that's kind of what we deserve, or I guess that's probably how he feels about it. Whew, that's really heavy. David Bowie, when he knew he was dying as well, and he recorded his final album, which was just full of that knowledge that he was passing, and the album was a send-off as well. Like, wow, what a grand gesture. The same thing happened with Freddie Mercury. Queen, when he passed away, he knew he was dying, and they recorded their last album, and it was very difficult, but it was a send-off, and, this is really heavy material for me, and that's, I haven't talked about it before now, but, this is impactful stuff, and it really sucks, it really does, but I guess that's what it's all about: life, death, and rebirth. Now, the day the music died for me was when my father passed away. And I don't know, some of you following the podcast know me, and some of you just listen to the podcast, and you don't really know me, and I haven't revealed that much history within the podcast. But to sum it up very briefly, my father was a bass player, and I had the honor of being able to perform with him many, many times. I was in a band with my father and my brother. The band was called the Classic Embers. They're still they still tour around, they're still around, they still, you know, do stuff. Just me and my dad. Me and my dad and my brother aren't obviously in the band. We haven't been in the band for a long time since... Well, for a long time. But anyway, getting to perform with my dad on stage and seeing the energy he had and his interactions with the crowd. My dad wasn't the front man, but don't tell him that. He was really good. And did I ever learn a lot from that guy? How to step up my game as a singer and to take a front man role. That the singer doesn't just sing, but he is the front man and, or front woman, I guess. Or front person. And has a job to perform. It's very, very important to interact with the audience. It's very important to engage the audience and to keep them engaged. So, yeah, I learned a lot from that guy. And yes, all these other things are really, really sad. They really, really suck. And everybody's mourning. And that's okay. Because I think we all need to mourn. But, yeah, my dad holds the biggest spot for me. Or the most impactful musician on me. Because I got to play with the guy, so... And man, he was awesome. I think what I'm going to do at the end of this podcast, kind of to commemorate him, is after my dad passed... I was... Oh man, sorry guys, this is really tough for me. When my dad was dying in his last week... spent the week with him as he was passing away, and we had lots of conversations and discussions. It was an enlightening time, and one of the things I told him, or the conversation rolled around, that I was gonna hang up my sticks and I wasn't gonna play music again anymore, not in an official capacity anyway. I was just gonna sit back, maybe tinker on the drums from time to time, but I lost my want to play. And my dad was, just came out of the corner swinging and pretty much told me that I needed to continue with music. And he never complimented me much before. He never really said much. He was proud of me, but he was one of those guys that, you know, I'm proud of you, I don't need to say it. But he would tell everybody how proud he was of me. And talk about, you know, what a great singer I was, or a great drummer, you know. And he was critical of my playing all the time. But it was to make me better. So anyway, he told me that I was not to stop music, that I was very talented, I was a very, very good singer, and I was a very, very good drummer. And it'd be a crime if I quit. And he didn't want me to quit. He says I needed to continue because I had it in me. I had that thing in me. And I didn't quit music because of him. So... anyway, the band that we were in at the time, we had a lot of talks about what we were going to do, like how do we replace my dad in the band, or how are we going to replace my dad in the band when he passed, and should we? I told him what my dad told me, I said, we can't really stop. We just can't. We gotta keep going. We kept going, and what happened? That band we were in, the last band we were in, we were called ourselves Just Jammin', because it's kind of just what we were doing. We record in the basement, and then we managed to record. Dad had never been in the studio before ever. But we managed to record a song that Todd and I had written. Todd and I had written three songs kind of all together in a bunch. And we presented them to the band, and the first song we worked on and worked out as a band was a song I wrote for my wife, kind of describing our, what I thought was our own unique love story, which was not schmaltzy or cheesy or maybe not overly, maybe not romantic at all in any way, but it was, I don't know, it defined who we were. And my dad really liked that song. So we decided to go in the studio, record it. And it was dad's only and his last recording he'd ever done. So his bass playing was really good on it. And it had his feel. So anyway, after he passed, of the three songs Todd and I recorded, when we record songs, when my brother and I write songs, the lyrics come later, and the lyrics are written around, usually I might come up with a melody live in the jam, but I don't come up with the actual words until later, and then the words usually reflect the vibe of the song. So I wrote the words later, the lyrics later, and I wrote it about my dad, and the talk he and I had about, you know, and that song was called Flow, and it was about keeping going and moving on but not forgetting, trying to make a lasting impression of his memory, that sort of thing. It was a nice song. So anyway, I haven't released these publicly before, and I was given the right to release these publicly by the rest of the band, but I think when this podcast is over, I'm going to check with those guys and let them know that I want to officially release it and put it out there. And anyway, the song was called Flow. That was the one we wrote about my dad. I don't know if I'm ready to put the other song out there, but I will eventually. Anyway, so I guess back on the Gord Downie topic, since I do have some time and I'm still driving and I'm still on the road, hence the podcast name. There's a few deaths that had hit me a lot. Probably the first notable one was Eric Carr from Kiss, who in a way was a gateway member that was the first member to allow. Eric Carr was a regular dude. He's just a regular dude who auditioned for the band and got in. He wasn't the megastar Gene Simmons or Paul Stanley or Ace Frehley or Peter Criss. He was just a guy that auditioned and, you know, through the process of elimination, managed to get in the band. He was like an everyman. And I really enjoyed Kiss as superstars and superheroes and all that sort of stuff, and I mean they were giants to me. They were more, you know, larger than life. So when Eric Carr joined the band, it was, hey, here's an everyman that joined the band, immortal, joining these immortals. And I always felt like he was the mortal guy in the band. He was the he wasn't larger than life, and he was us. Like, that was me joining Kiss, and that's how I felt. I don't know, I can't explain why the guy impacted me so much, but he did. He was all his ups and downs in the band. Like, he had, the only ups and downs he had with the band were the ups and downs of the band themselves as they were struggling with their fame, and they weren't kind of hitting the notes they hit in the 70s, and their 80s were, you know, them trying to find themselves and all that. Anyway, so when he passed away, same day Freddie Mercury died, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And after that, the other big one was when Johnny died, Johnny Cash, of course. His whole legacy after June Carter passed, and Oh man, he put some amazing recordings out that they're just freaking amazing. Those ones hit me like really, really, really hard. I guess now, when Prince died, it was kind of the same. He had an impact on me for a number of years, but not as encompassing as Eric or Johnny, I guess. But it was still her, but it was kind of like, holy crap, this is weird. But Gord Downie, now the Americans listening to this podcast may not understand. I'm going to try to approximate this in the best way possible. And it's not in any way meant to be disparaging or anything like that. But if you're a Canadian, you're listening to this podcast, I don't need to explain anything to you. You know who Gord Downie is. He is part of your subconsciousness. He's part of every Canadian subconsciousness. He is the most... him and his band are the most important musical contribution to our country of all time. I don't care what anybody else says about who else, Burton Cummings or the Guess Who. No, it's the Hip. Continuously and endlessly, they've continued to put albums out. They continue to get played on the radio with amazing songs about being Canadian and how great it is in our history, and they're a band that never sold out, never, you know, went to the States and became Americans to find their fame and fortune. No, they were Canadian icons. They'll never be surpassed, they'll never be replaced, and they never should be. So to the Americans listening to the podcast, I think the closest approximation I could say is if Bruce Springsteen decided he was going on one last tour, and because he was dying, and this was his last tour. Gord Downie, as the front man for the most important band in Canadian history, is Bruce Springsteen, really. But again, I'm not trying to be disparaging, but I think more important than Springsteen, because Gord Downie, his words, his poetry, his stage performances. Damn it, his stage performances. No one performed like Gord Downie. I had the opportunity to see him live, and wow. Like, just freaking impressive, man. Anyway, this final tour is so typical of this band and this man. So typical of always putting the fans first, always going out there and challenging the fans. Their most popular selling album was their second album, second album, I guess, those first two. But despite that, they've had mega success on every other album. I think Fully Completely, their third official album, they had an EP that was released as their first album, I guess. But anyway, their third full-length release, Fully Completely, that might have actually potentially outsold the Road Apples, the previous one. But nonetheless, they challenged us. They changed their music as they went along. They continued to evolve. And they continued to get airplay, because you have to give these guys their due. I'm having a hard time. I haven't been able to read too many of the headlines about it. I haven't been able to read what maybe other musicians have been saying about him. I've been completely off the radar with it, because I'm still processing, and they're too important to the fabric of Canada. And they also taught us to respect our country. Sometimes as Canadians, we might forget about things. We might, you know, take a step back. But he's super important. He's also, interestingly enough, on Canadian radio, you're not allowed to use curse words, like, on mainstream radio. I'm not talking about college or independent or university radio, but you got to be careful. You can't use the F word. They had a song that I don't think has the F word in it, and I don't think it's ever been censored. I think they play it because it's Gord singing it, and when he uses the F word, he is not using the F word. He's not using the F word like you may do in rap, just to have it there, just to punch you in the face. He used it to express a point, a very valid point, and a really good writer or a really good lyricist will use profanity in a limited sense for the most important reason and use it sparingly to have the most impact. There's two songs that are played on the radio currently, well, that are been played for the last 20 years, that have the F word in it, that are never censored. That's The Hip has a song, and Pearl Jam has a song too, that they don't censor it, they don't delete it, it's there. It's so well crafted and put in the song that, so it's interesting. Am I gonna go see their final tour? No, I don't think I can. Would it be important? Yeah, but there's something that popped up over the last few years about concerts and concert tickets that have prevented, well, most of the Hip fans, because we're all fans, but a lot of us are not gonna be able to see the show because of the scalping epidemic that's been going on in Canada. I don't know what it's like in other countries, but there's a scalping epidemic that's been going on that I don't know why it's not illegal, why it's allowed, but there are companies that just scoop up, they get all the codes, they scoop up as many tickets as they have, and then they inflate the price 8 or 10 times, or I think the Hip tickets, I'm guessing, are within the $30 to $50 range, and they're being scalped for $800 online, which is a crime. So if you wanted to see the Hip one last time, you won't be able to because someone is making a profit off this man's death. And for those listening who are not familiar with the Hip, the proceeds of this concert are not going into the pockets of the band. Because they're the Hip, man. They're giving it all away to charity. Like, frick off, man. How can you be that important and pristine a band to do that? So the band is making nothing off this tour. The scalpers are making a killing because of the demand. They're making a ridiculous amount of money off this tour. And it's, wow, it's just wrong. So I'm basically not going because I knew there was no way to even get a ticket. It's going to be, the last show is going to be on TV, and I'm going to be watching it there or recording it there. I have a wedding the same day, so I don't know what to do. I really need to go to the wedding. It's an important wedding to go to. But anyway, I will see the final concert. And I've seen them before, so that's good. There's some people that may not have seen them yet that are going to be going and spending the $800 to go see them, because you can only buy tickets from scalpers. Anyway. Yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts on the whole thing. I didn't even know I was going to tie it into my dad, but there you be. Anyway, that's the podcast for today. Sorry to be so dour, but something I had to talk about, something I had to get out there. when I do the podcast out of order too, I've decided that I'm going to do like a, they won't be numbered normally like the other ones, but they'll have like a point something number to them or whichever. But anyway, I'm going to sign off here. I've arrived at my destination. Great talking to you guys, and I'm going to be posting this here on a Saturday. All right, talk to you guys later. My phone timed out. That's awesome. Bye. Thought I'd come back to the podcast here again. And I wanted to talk about, I guess I've been thinking about it all day. I just recorded the podcast this morning, and I'd want to put an ad on. I'm definitely going to play the song after. I don't care what anybody says. I think I have to post the song, put it out there. But I did want to share a story, and I guess maybe why it got me thinking about my dad. But my dad and my brother and I, as I mentioned before, were in a band together, and those two guys taught me a lot about performing live and the professionalism of it all and that sort of thing. But it was a cover band that we were in, and picking the songs for the sets were always an interesting thing. And the band did four sets, usually an evening. And each set was about, I don't know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes long, somewhere in that ballpark. If you guys are interested in the band at all, you can get a couple of videos from that time with that band up on my YouTube page, which is linked in with the podcast, so you can take a shot of it, take a look at it there, or through the Reverb Nation page. But anyway, you know, very rarely would we pick more than a song from any particular artist, because we wanted to really cover a large gamut of songs. And there's a couple bands that we do a couple songs of. So for example, the guys in the bands were big fans of the Eagles, so we did a couple of Eagles songs. We did Take It Easy, and we did Lying Eyes. And we always, you know, toyed with the idea of doing a third. The only band that we had, I think, three songs of was the Tragically Hip. We did New Orleans Is Sinkin', and we did Blow It High Dough, and we also did Ahead by a Century, all by the Hip. And playing those songs live was really, really, really interesting, because I noticed this watching other cover bands, every time you're playing, and then all of a sudden a Tragically Hip song comes on, or the band performs a Tragically Hip song. And there's this community. So even if the band is not doing well, not getting the crowd over, not sounding well enough to, you know, to make it work or whatever, as soon as your band, as soon as the band starts playing a Hip song, particularly like, one of them off the first three albums, I guess, the crowd kind of stops what it's doing, kind of gets involved, starts singing along, a little fill up the dance floor or whatever, or starts singing along. Even the dudes, it's funny, the dudes will be up there and they'll be pumping their fists along to the song or singing along. They won't sing along to other stuff, but they'll sing along to that song. And then, the gals will get up there and dance. And it's just really, really interesting how the minute, and it doesn't matter, everyone, as soon as you play the opening chords to any Hip song, or just the opening beat, everybody knows. So, the opening lick to New Orleans Is Sinkin', boom, boom, bang, boom, bang, 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 boom, bang, like, how, everybody knows what that song is. And you could just go, boom, boom, bang, and that's it. Everybody knows exactly what song you're going to play. Everybody stands to attention, or, you know, they might be chatting at their table, having their drinks, and all of a sudden, the first, like, three notes, or three or four notes of the song, people's heads raise up from their tables, and they're kind of looking towards the stage, and then they all, it's weird, I've seen this before, because I've performed the songs quite a few times, everybody just starts nodding, like, yeah, that's the Hip, yeah, right on. And it's weird. The bands may not perform it well, or they may perform it well, which It's irrelevant. You're playing hip song. There's a community that happens there, and everyone's involved. Good, bad, or ugly, depending. It doesn't matter what the song, how the performance of the song is. Good, bad, or ugly, everyone's involved. Everyone's in. Everyone buys in. Because it's the hip, man. I remember Little Bones. Oh, sorry, we used to play Little Bones. Yeah, so playing Little Bones, as soon as that song came on, the whole line where he's saying $2.50 for an eyeball and a buck and a half for an ear, everybody sings along. And they're not singing along. They're not going, buck and a half for an ear. No, they're like, buck and a half for a beer. Like, they're just, like, the people just get freaking excited and they're, you know, shaking their fists in the air and fist bumping, and you know, guys are like cheering each other. And if the band's reasonably good, they don't even have to be great, reasonably good, they just get even more hyped up. And that was the power of the hip. They transcended everything. People go to a bar, it's a live band playing, I don't care, I'm gonna play the slot machines, or you know, I'm just gonna go get super drunk, you know, and get trashed and hit on chicks or whatever. The minute a hip song comes on, everybody freaking stops. It's magic. It is absolute magic. And I know personally, as a front man, singing that song, like singing any of those songs, and the connection with the audience, it's, you know, with sometimes you just hit it. You just hit it. It's that right song with that audience, you know. But with the hip, it didn't matter. There was no right song. There was no right song with a particular audience. Every audience was a hip audience. It didn't matter. Everybody likes a hip song, whether they like the hip or not. Everybody has a favorite hip song, whether they like the hip or not. Oh, I've never owned a hip album. Everybody knows the hip. It's such a part of our culture. And it transcends music. It transcends style of music, because everybody likes the hip regardless. The metalheads like the hip. The pop people like the hip. It transcends everything. The hip is it's not music or a band, or it's just so above any of that. It is just so. It transcends anything and everything. It is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So, I just want to share that little hip memory. I'm going to play the song Girl for My Dad. And we're going to put that on next. Hope you guys like it. This is one of the first studio recordings I'd done in a studio. So I kind of didn't know what I was doing, so the stuff there you don't like, well, I apologize. Just to give credit where credit's due, this band on the recording is myself on vocals and drums, my brother on guitar, who's also in the band Dome, and you hear his bass work in the band Dome. Also we have Kim LeBleu on bass, and we have Ray, who is our keyboard player and also produced the track, recorded the track. It's his studio recording at Dragon Studios. And this is put together by him. And here we go. The song is called Flow. And my screen timed out. That's fucking awesome. Even better. I can't even stop it. That's awesome.